Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello, folks, and welcome back to Indian Wells, where it's Friday night. It's 9:35 p.m. as we come to you from Tennis Podcast Towers. Myself, David and Matt, we've got the tennis on the telly. We've been at the Indian Wells Tennis Garden all day. We're now back at base watching on the telly. There's still a lot of matches still to be played, still to even start, quite frankly. Round two matches being played just at the moment. And the reason there's still so many to be played today is because it blooming rained.
What was all that about? I mean, I was not happy this morning. I mean, I wasn't happy with the cloud, let alone. I had no clue that there was rain on the way. And I mean, it disrupted things for probably not that long based on normal tennis tournament standards, but Indian Wells standards, Catherine. I mean, you looked at me as if to say this had never happened to you before.
Well, it didn't even occur to me as a potential obstacle in our day or any of our days throughout this tournament. So yeah, as normal as it is in tennis, it just wasn't on my radar for this tournament, and I was most displeased by it. And the place looks all wrong in the rain, doesn't it? You said, Matt, it's like a British seaside town out of season. It just looks
and feels wrong.
Dystopian somehow. I mean, still an absolute delight, don't get me wrong, just less of a delight.
And then you get all the classic tennis things that it doesn't really know how to behave properly in the rain, because instead of covering the court with a tent-like thing, as Taylor Swift would say, they get leaf blowers out to try and dry the courts.
And yeah, they're just sort of pushing water around.
Just pushing it around, and you're thinking, there must be a better system than this one. And yes, I speak as someone who went out to watch Wu Yibing versus Alejandro Davidovich Fokina.
Off he went, guys.
I was gone a while, wasn't I?
He was gone a while.
I saw 2 points. Because it took them ages to dry the court. The leaf blower guy got a huge round of applause when he finally finished.
So tennis.
And then the players came out, 2 points, started raining again.
A troop of ball boys coming out with towels, getting a round of applause. That's also very tennis, isn't it? Goodness me, that finished quickly. I've just looked up and Daniil Medvedev is shaking hands with the umpire.
Yeah, he didn't.
That was, as we were starting to record 5 minutes ago, that felt like game on with Brandon Nakashima.
That is another reason you like Daniil Medvedev, isn't it? He is the faff-free prince of tennis.
Yeah.
I mean, he's, you know, he's a bit of a mess. But
a shiver went down my spine when you said that, David.
But
make a t-shirt with that on.
He's so quick between the points, and then when he wins match point, he just does no shenanigans. There's
quick between points is one of my low key biggest determining factors of whether I like a player. I mean, there are outliers, obviously Nadal, and plenty of others. But those outliers tend to be people that, you know, have so much else going for them that you can overlook it. But I could do a backhand list of I could do a quick between points list.
Okay, I want to see that list. And can I just
think it would be quite boring,
draw attention
actually,
to the fact that
I'll in a quiet moment I'll draw it up.
What's Ivashka's first name?
Ilya.
Yeah, okay, so that's who Daniil Medvedev's going to play. And we've had
whenever you say Ilya Ivashka, Matt always follows it up with, he's quite good. He's always trying to sell Ilya Ivashka when you're musing over a prediction. Yeah. Matt will always try and push Ilya Ivashka.
I never go for it myself.
Right, okay.
I just always try and convince Catherine.
To get to my point, on the draw that we just saw on the Tennis Channel screen here, the first player that Matt saw in the entire tournament was Botik van der Zandschulp. And he's out. And the theory is that the first player that you see when you're at a tennis tournament is going to win the tournament. So that's been disproved.
That's true. I do always play that game. The first players I'm going to see are going to win the tournament. Although,
who's going to win the women's tournament?
Amanda Anisimova.
Oh, well.
Who is yet
she's
to play.
In.
She's been
I
a victim
saw
of the rain.
Karolina Mukova, though, just before Matt clocked Anisimova.
Okay.
So
what's Mukova doing?
She's still in the tournament, but she's got a...
She's got Azarenka
tomorrow, yeah.
First up.
That's not very easy.
Good match. I mean, look, if she can stay fit, she could win the tournament, but obviously she won't. She'll fall over in the third game or something.
Oh, I hope she it'd be great.
I wish her well.
If she had a run, like a run of good health, how
I'd
good
love
do
to
you,
see that.
Oh, she's a great player.
How good do you think she could actually be?
She should be
top 10.
If she's fit, she's a top 10 player, I think.
I think she could be
top 10. Yeah.
Wow.
I think I had her in my year-end top 10, didn't I, a couple of years ago? One of the years when she got consistently injured.
I still don't think I really know what sort of player she is. All I know is that
she's
that
a bit of everything.
Ash Barty rates her. That she just thinks she's a baller of a player, you know.
Her kind of
player.
She's got all sorts of tools, apart from a body, which is quite useful in tennis. Anyway, what has been happening... what do we want to do first? We want to do what's been happening with us, or what's been happening with the important stuff, the tennis?
I'm going with us.
Well, we've been kept very busy. You know how afraid I was that our meet and greets would be embarrassingly poorly attended. I don't want to suggest any degree of complacency at all. Please, please still come. If you're planning to come, the well could run dry at any moment. But so far, they've been going very well, and you've done us proud by showing up at our meet and greets at the on location booth on site at Indian Wells, and we've loved it. We've loved meeting so many of you. It has been good vibes only, hasn't it?
Oh, it's been brilliant. Yeah. One of my favourite things is the number of people who have ready on their phone a picture of their dog to show Catherine.
It's the best.
It's like, we haven't prepared anything. We haven't come with signed Tsitsipas-style autographs. But they all have their dogs ready, and I love it.
And we appreciate it.
Yeah.
I mean,
everyone's so nice.
Imagine, Catherine, if... 20 years ago you were allowed to kind of create the perfect existence of a job, and your job was to talk about tennis and have people come up and show you pictures of their dogs, and that was something one could get paid for. Imagine that. If you'd have told 15-year-old Catherine Whittaker that would happen.
Yeah, it's like the universe sent the rain just to keep my feet on the ground a little bit. Honestly, we won't bang on about it for too long, but just want to say thank you, because it's been an absolute treat to meet so many of you, and we're going to continue doing these meet and greets for anybody that can make it to Indian Wells, that's planning to make it to Indian Wells. Look, if you don't fancy meeting us, that's fine, but if you do, keep across our social media. We'll be letting you know each day what time we'll be hanging around at the booth, playing it cool if no one's there.
just sort of trying to look as if we're just sort of, yeah, know, we're just
this
having,
is,
having
this
a bit
is
of a chill out here.
Hang out between the hours of 12 and 1. yeah, so tomorrow, as we record this, so Saturday, we'll be there between 12:30 and 1 in the afternoon. So do come along and say hi and look out on our social media for alerts of future time slots. A bit of other housekeeping for you on the On Location front, because of course it is courtesy of On Location that we are all here at Indian Wells at the BNP Paribas Open for the first time as a podcast team. And On Location are offering any podcast listener who books a tennis package in the Steve Fergal's International Tennis Tour's booth on site at the BNP Paribas Open, a 5% discount on the total package. If you book on site in the booth while you're meeting us and sheltering from the rain.
That, we're not doing that again. We're not having any more rain. I've had enough now.
So there's all sorts on offer in the Steve Fergal's booth. So do head over there, whether we're there or not, quite frankly. And an update on the competition package that we told you about in our last podcast. Now, this is available to US and UK listeners. As we said in the last pod, we desperately want to make this available to all our listeners, but at the moment, legally, we're only able to open it up to listeners in the UK and the US. It's an incredible competition prize package for the BNP Paribas Open here in Indian Wells next year. 3-night stay at a hotel, transportation all included, VIP everything, and tickets to both semi-finals and finals. It is an absolute dream package, and I gave you the wrong URL to enter it in the last spot.
And it wasn't even Catherine's fault, because I wrote it down for her and it was wrong.
It's open to all friends of the pod in the UK and the US, and listen out for this, folks, because this is the right URL. It is www.toursfortennis.com/podcast/TTP. www.toursthenumber4tennis.com/podcast/TTP. That's Tango Tango Papa.
Very good.
To be clear. So, on to the tennis. Yeah. And I think the biggest result, the biggest shock of the tournament so far, if it is indeed a shock, and we can talk about that now, is Stefanos Tsitsipas going out, beaten by Jordan Thompson, 7-6 in the third. Not the highest quality match earlier on today, I would say. Plenty of drama, but just not necessarily the highest level. And I think, you know, a good deal of inconsistency from Tsitsipas really contributing to that. And frankly, he warned us this would happen, didn't he? He said in his pre-tournament press conference 2 days ago, don't expect me to win this thing, because I'm not expecting to win this thing or even come close, because I'm not fit.
Mm. Yeah, he said he was in recovery mode still, didn't he?
And at the time, our reaction was, well, what are you doing here? And, well, rinse and
repeat. That is still my reaction.
Yeah, what are you doing here? Yeah. What were you doing here?
Yeah.
Maybe just having a nice holiday, in which case, I feel you. Lovely. but possibly not the best decision for your career in the short to medium term. I don't know.
Yeah, and you're right. The fact that we knew all this coming into the match does make it sort of kind of hard to classify as an upset, really. You know, we all had Tsitsipas on upset watch. It wasn't surprising to me that he lost this match, considering the problems that he had. What is a bit surprising is the nature of the loss, because it wasn't like he just couldn't play. It wasn't like he got absolutely thrashed out there. He lost the big points, and very often the better players, even when they're not at their best, even when they're struggling, they squeeze through because they win the big points. And he lost two tie breaks today to Jordan Thompson. The first one, a complete blowout, 7-love. He just had a shocker. And the second one in the third set, his forehand just completely deserted him. You know, and Tsitsipas' forehand one of the best on tour. I think four unforced errors off that wing in the final set tiebreak, including on match point. And you know, it's a big moment for Jordan Thompson. We were all at Queen's. What was it, 6 years ago now, where he had his only other top 10 win when he was a lucky loser and beat Andy Murray. And you know, he's not a guy who has a lot of big wins, so it's a massive moment for him. And he played very well, but. Yeah, an odd decision, I think, from Tsitsipas to play, given the problems he's got and the fact that he could have used this time to rest and get strong for the clay court season, which we know is his best time of year.
Yeah, I'm really interested in whether he shows up in Miami. Mm. I mean, it seems pretty clear to me that he shouldn't go to Miami, even if he has a really good week of rehab and recovery now. I mean, as you say, surely he now has to be thinking in terms of just being in absolute prime shape for the clay court season. That clay court season this year feels massive for Stefanos Tsitsipas, and Miami probably needs to be a casualty.
I do think this tournament should have been a casualty as well. I get the pressure to play these mandatory events and you lose out on points and all the rest of it. But he wasn't fit. He wasn't fully fit. He was passably fit to play the match. He got through it. But he's been beaten by Jordan Thompson. And with all due respect to a very good player who we saw really achieve at the Davis Cup late last year, I was impressed with him. He's not in Tsitsipas' league as a tennis player when Tsitsipas is right. And he clearly wasn't right today. And I don't like it. I don't like seeing players go out in front of a full stadium when they know they're not right, really. I just don't see the point. You're not going to get very far. And here he is, out in the first match. Just don't do it.
Another couple of, not quite shocks, but eyebrow raisers of results in the men's side of things. We've just watched Matteo Berrettini go out the hands of Tari Daniel. Daniel now going through to face Cam Norrie, of course, former champion in the third round. It's a tough old time for Berrettini, isn't it? Had to retire from his match against Holger Rune in Acapulco with a calf injury. We didn't see all of this match against Tari Daniel. We watched most of the third set, but it didn't look to be struggling with injury at all. He was moving just fine. He was
That's just the thing. Not up to it. I don't really know where we stand with Berrettini. I mean, look, I know he's had terrible injury problems and illness as well that kept him out of Wimbledon with COVID and all the rest of it. But he just looks a man bereft in that match today, bereft of form and confidence. It's a horrible struggle, it looks, at the moment, because he wants it so much. He's another one of these, a bit like Tsitsipas, really, great appetite for the sport, and it's just not there. Must be horrible when you're grasping for it.
Still thinking about that backhand.
Maybe he's still thinking about that backhand. Mm.
The one against Andy Murray when he had match points.
Except maybe, the fact is, even if he hadn't lost to Andy Murray, he might have lost to Kokkinakis in the next round, or, you know, maybe he's never quite been in the form, you know.
He was really bad in the first two sets against Murray, wasn't he, in that
match. Maybe that, what I'm saying is, maybe that backhand wasn't as significant as we think. Maybe that backhand was just significant in that match, but I don't know.
And in my head.
Yeah. Denis Shapovalov lost today to Hugo Humbert. It was all just very Denis Shapovalov, wasn't it?
Yeah, and he seemed to be gesturing to his box throughout, you know, sort of asking them to leave. And they didn't. And he lost in a whirlwind of unforced errors from a breakup in both sets. And it just felt very familiar, really. You know, we spoke the other day about Denis Shapovalov really pleasantly surprising us, and it's been, you know, in terms of his piece in Players Tribune, and still think he deserves an awful lot of credit for that. it's been a very long time since Shapovalov pleasantly surprised me on the tennis court.
When was the last time I know what to expect from
Shapovalov.
No. When was the last time he surprised you on the tennis court?
Pleasantly surprised me was when he beat Alexander Zverev at the Australian Open, what was that, a year and a half ago?
Yeah.
Because I felt, and look, that was when he was being coached by Jamie Delgado, and it's difficult to know how much cause and effect is involved there. But I think that Denis Shapovalov needs a proper coach and somebody who is going to help him package his game and get the best out of it. And I feel like most of his matches are just rinse and repeat jobs. You know what you're going to get. You're going to get some spectacular shot making, but you're probably going to get a disappointment after sooner or later.
Because currently his coach is Peter Polanski, who has no credentials.
Yeah, I don't know Peter Polanski. I only know him from his career, which wasn't a lot, to be honest. And I know him from Twitter, where he's made some noise over the years and put a few noses out of joint. Look, I'm sure they're good mates and that he enjoys his company and maybe he feels he's getting something from him. Well, the results wouldn't suggest so, to be honest. And I just feel as though with Shapovalov's prodigious talent, there's so much you could do with him if you were a really top coach who was being trusted to do their job and had Shapovalov's buy-in. And that just isn't the case. I think we had a little snapshot of it with what Jamie Delgado wanted to do with him, which is make him a pro, make him a real hard professional and see what that could do. And I think that's what's required. And I'd love to see an experienced coach who's been there and done it get hold of him.
Like when Grigor Dimitrov brought Roger Rashid on and they were like, right, let's get to work. And okay, debate about whether Grigor Dimitrov achieved his potential for a tennis relived show in the future, but
well, they're similar,
certainly,
aren't they? They're similar, Shapovalov and Dimitrov. And Dimitrov got to Grand Slam semi-final. He won the ATP finals.
I mean, Shapovalov has been to a Wimbledon semi-final.
Yes, he has. But arguably, I think he's even more talented or more explosive than Dimitrov. And look, he's still young. There's still time. But something has to actually change. He is not going to achieve his ambitions or fulfill his potential by doing what he's doing right now. If he just keeps doing that and expecting it to eventually come good, I don't see it.
And what was Billie Jean King's line to you about being young until you're not?
I think you just said the line.
You're young until you're not. Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Hmm. Or you have a lot of time until you don't.
Yeah. Well, seeing as we're speaking of not being young, Andy Murray.
What are you looking at me for?
35-year-old Andy Murray is now averaging 3 hours and 7 minutes per match in 2023.
Is he really?
Yep.
And it feels like it.
Yeah. To be honest, I was surprised that stat was not longer. Yesterday, he played, I think, 3 hours and 12 minutes, of course. Three sets, of course, to beat Tomas Martín Echeverri of Argentina, who's a flipping ball machine. I mean, I'd love to see his average match length.
He's loving the gritty hard court with the high bounce, isn't he?
quite a stylish player, but just doesn't have anything close to a point-ending shot. So it just feels like ping pong. Quite slow ping pong. Yeah, it was all just set up for an Andy Murray epic, and of course there were lots of opportunities for him to get that done in straight sets. Lots he had set points, didn't he? In the first set, lost it on what looked like a dodgy line call in the first set tiebreak. But of course, it's Hawkeye Live, isn't it? So there's no questioning anything. They run a replay and it was in by a millimetre, and there was Andy Murray frozen, bent double in the centre of the court, sort of like a statue, refusing to accept that call was really real, and all the hour and 20 minutes worth of toil that he and we had put into that first set was all for nothing. But of course, he comes back and wins the second set, just as David predicted. He said, quick set here. And yeah, a quick set for Andy Murray is 45 minutes.
I actually think that's where you see the champions. I mean, I know what he should be doing is not having a 1 hour, 20-minute set. He should
28
be...
28
minutes. 28 minutes. He should be winning officially. I mean, that's an absurd length set, isn't it? But I can never quite get my head around how players withstand the disappointment of not winning the 1 hour, 28-minute set. I always expect them, logically, to just tailspin after that. Most non-champions, I think, tailspin. But the top players, they just don't. They reset, and that's why I said he's going to win the set. I said he'd win it 6-2. He won it 6-1. And that's what him and Djokovic and Nadal and the best players, Medvedev, that's, you might get them for a set, but then you're going to think you've reached the peak and they're going to be just getting started. And they'll come out and they'll be 3-love up on you in about 10 minutes.
Andy Murray's not doing anything in 10 minutes at the moment. but yeah, I take the point and I agree with it.
I'm fascinated to see how, because he made this big thing of wanting to win close matches last year, didn't he? And suddenly all he can do is win close matches.
And he's so pleased with himself for turning that around, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 7 out of 10 matches I think he's played this year have gone the distance. But
and he's won all of, won all of his deciding sets.
But the big goal is now win efficiently. And so how do you get that groove going? And I suspect it'll happen.
Well, maybe with a bit of luck in the draw.
Yes, because he was due to play Pablo Carreño Busta. I had blocked off 3 hours tomorrow. I mean, that's
lowballing it.
That just had lengthy, here we go again, all over it. But Pablo Carreño Busta has had to withdraw. So even though it's a second round match, it's a seeded position that Carreño Busta was in. So a lucky loser comes in. Murray doesn't get a walkover, and it's Radu Albot, which, you know, is definitely a kinder draw. I mean, there is something, you know, as much as Murray, I'm sure, would love to win in two efficient sets, and I think a lot of people would like to see that, there is something quite powerful about seeing Murray in these slogs, because, you know, in a way, it's the slogs and it's the extreme effort that he always had to put in, which has kind of left his body in the state that it's in. You know, it's taken its toll. And yet, even when he's in that state, he refuses to let his body not let him still play these matches, you know, the ones that he lives and breathes for. So, you know, it's quite an emotional experience to watch Murray in these epics at this stage in his career. But yeah, there's just something does feel like it needs to change. I don't know. I know it's sustainable at the moment. He's sustained it really well, but he need to be more efficient.
He's got to get himself seeded for Wimbledon, hasn't he? He's got to get his ranking up seeded for Wimbledon. It's interesting. He was talking about his level and his ranking after the win yesterday, and he said in press he thinks he plays around between 6 and 10 tournaments fewer than the other players that are around his same ranking, by which he means the actual tennis I'm playing is far better than my ranking. It's just that I'm not able to play it as much as these guys that have got two natural hips. Which was an interesting point, I thought. I mean, I'm sure the players around his ranking, which would have a thing or two to say about that. And there's this tension, isn't there, between Yeah, I mean, I so rarely check in on Andy Murray's ranking or think about it. It just seems so irrelevant to what Andy Murray is at this stage of his career. You know, none of what we've experienced with Andy Murray this year has anything to do with where he's ranked in the world. And yet, if he is to achieve what he thinks he has left in him, which is this deep run at a slam or two, and let's be honest, somewhere in Andy Murray, deep down, whether he will ever say it out loud or not, he thinks he can win Wimbledon. He needs to get his ranking up to get seeded, really, doesn't he? To give himself the best chance of that not being a total pipe dream. So it just feels like this. There's this. It feels wrong to be talking about ranking with Andy Murray, and yet it is a factor.
Yeah. I agree. I don't think about his ranking, but it is important. And I know it was scrappy and scratchy that match yesterday, but he's definitely trending in the right direction in terms of his tennis. It is tough here. It always has been.
Yeah.
And it's so slow and all the rest of it and high bouncing.
Yeah, but I mean, let's not forget. It is peak. Andy Murray lost to an Argentine ball machine here. Didn't he? Lost to Federico Del Bonis when he was close to the peak of his powers. So,
Don't expect too much from him at this tournament. He should beat Rado Albot, to be honest. But, you know, just generally speaking, there's a demeanour about him that says, I'm enjoying this and I can't believe I'm pulling all these matches out. And as you said, Catherine, I'm loving it. At the end of the match, 3 hours, 7 minutes, he looked so chuffed.
That's the thing. I think big picture, he wants efficient wins because, you know, it preserves more of his canister and he must be painfully aware of his canister. But I actually think in the moment, in terms of immediate gratification, he'd rather what he had yesterday.
And
that gives him the buzz.
That was a very interesting answer in the press conference yesterday. He said, look, I didn't go that far in Australia, but the reaction I had when I got home, the number of people that I met around and about, because let's not forget, the country stopped for those matches that he was playing because whilst it was 4 a.m. in Australia, it was 5 p.m. in the afternoon in the UK, and the whole country was watching his matches that weekend against Kokkinakis and then Roberto Bautista Agut and obviously Berrettini. You know, the listening figures we had on the radio for his matches were extraordinary, and I think those moments matter too. I think he'll take those with him as well in his reservoir.
Yeah, and
of
the
memories.
Things like the coming back from 2 sets love down record.
Yeah.
You know, owning that. We know that matters to him. And it made me think of that, the last question I asked him after his eventual defeat, the Australian Open, you know, when he'd been talking about how he still thinks he has one or maybe more deep slam runs in him. And he'd been talking about this tremendous effort and sacrifice he'd made in this off-season to get himself in this shape. And my question was, is it enough? If this is all it is, what you've experienced here this week ends up being what all that is for, is it enough? And I got the impression on reflection and having experienced a taste of the reaction to that he got back home, I suspect the answer, he wants more, but if there isn't more, I got the impression that it probably is enough, and that's heartening because it's certainly enough for me.
Well, what did he say yesterday? He said, I am putting everything I possibly can into getting the maximum amount out of my game in the time I've still got left, and I'm really proud of that, and basically I'm at peace with it. If it doesn't quite get the results maybe I'd love, I'm okay with that.
Can someone send him to put an arm around Dominic Thiem, please, and some words?
Well, and it sounded like he was reaching out to him in an answer in his press conference because he named Dominic Thiem as one of the players. He was asked about Richard Gasquet and Stan Wawrinka, players that he shared years with, many, many years, locker rooms, tennis courts, big arenas, who have struggled terribly with injury, just as he has. And when it got onto the subject of team, there was a sort of melancholy in the air. And he really feels for him, I think, Andy Murray.
Yeah, and he suggested that he thinks it's mostly psychological with team. And that does sound right to me. I mean, by all accounts, physically, team is okay. He looks strong, he's moving well. But, you know, we watched a lot of his match yesterday against Adrian Mannarino, an opponent he'd beaten 8 times out of 8 in terms of completed matches. He did have to retire against him once, but, you know, he had an amazing record against Mannarino in the peak of his career. And he should have won this match. He was sort of several times in a winning position, setting the break up, and then he clawed his way back in the third set, led the tiebreak a couple of times, and then his bottle has gone. His ability to deliver when it matters has gone. And I saw the same thing against Thiago Monteiro the other day in Rio, which was another third set tiebreak defeat, because there are so many flashes and signs that the game is still there. You know, the serve's looking good, the backhand.
The flashes that are so cruel.
Mm. Yeah, because it you know, it's
reminds
it's like
us
the,
what we're missing.
It's like the sort of hope that kills. Mm. And, you know, some of the backhands he was hitting yesterday were vintage team. The issue does appear to be the forehand. I think his speed is down. He doesn't trust it. It was the forehand that let him down in that tie break. And his demeanor on court is quite negative. So short on confidence. There's just nothing for him to cling on to, and it's really, really tough for him. You're just waiting for a moment, and it felt like yesterday's match against Mannarino could be the one. You know, coming through that, you felt maybe would have given him some spark, but as it happens, and it's another close defeat, it just feels like it sort of just piles on the misery.
There's something so profound about sport in his struggles, I think, which is all these athletes that devote themselves in monk-like ways to being the best in the world at what they do, technically and athletically. And look, Dominic Thiem does not look like he's putting an ounce less work in. He looks every bit the physical specimen he ever did. And yet, it can still desert you. It can still be completely beyond your control. And that's just so agonizing, and so it must just be maddening to the point of destruction, mental destruction, I think. Now, look, what I've heard about Dominic Thiem is that no matter what medical professionals and psychologists tell him, he can't get the fears about his wrist out of his mind when he hits his forehand. What I've heard is that he feels like he's going to, in the back of his mind, he feels like he's going to break his wrist every time he goes for it on the forehand. And, you know, we all know how it feels in our own puny little ways to just, no matter how much you want to get a bug out of your brain, just not being able to. And sort of hating yourself for not having that self-control and self-discipline. I mean, I feel for him so desperately. And I just hope that all it will take is for something to click. You know, just for him to get proof of concept that it is possible. But yeah,
it's not looking good.
It's not looking good. I'm struggling for positivity. But look, if anyone can give him some motivation. I do feel like it might be Andy Murray.
Well, certainly some belief based on how low Murray went and became. And I remember they played each other late last year, and there was a sort of consoling arm around the shoulder from Andy Murray at the net, because he knows what the real Dominic Thiem is as a tennis player. And Murray's face lit up talking about his colleagues and his admiration for them, and I think his nostalgia almost of having shared all these years together, and he wants them to get the last drops out of their careers too.
There was a slightly sad Guillaume Fils performance as well the other night, wasn't there? Slightly worried about his future. Anyway, more positive things. I looked up a moment ago and Jessica Pegula was love 40 on the Camilla Georgie serve in the opening game, and it all looked to be going very Jessica Pegula. And now I've looked up again and Camilla Georgie serving 2-love up in this match. This is on Stadium 1.
You want to have hard hats if you're around this court with these two hitting the ball as hard as they are. It's extraordinary.
Yeah, interesting. It is interesting. This has got top billing. Coco Gauff was over on Stadium 2. She was playing Christina Buchsa of beating Andreescu and denying us Andreescu Świątek at the Australian Open fame, and also with low point in Reggie's predictions at the Australian Open fame. Anyway, Gauff beat Buchsa. What other results have we had today in the women's side of things? We had a very Maria Sakkari-esque Maria Sakkari performance. Did win through in the end, 3 sets over Shelby Rogers, helped out by injury to Shelby Rogers in that third set. It was looking ropey for Sakkari.
There was a moment where Rogers had 15-40 on the Sakkari serve, and if she'd have won one of those next 2 points, she'd have been serving for the match. I think if she was set in 5-4, she'd have been. And I said, oh, she's going to be serving for the match in a minute. 3 mighty forehands later from Sakkari, and the match is totally turned on its head. And she was struggling terribly with her serve, falling over as she's trying to hit exaggerated kick serves out wide. And but she's got the job done. I mean, I just think there's a woman who's searching for a road that works, the rhythm on the Hana game, reliability. You know, it's just not, it's not there at the moment. It's all a struggle. But she's still in the tournament.
Still in the tournament, yeah. Yeah.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
As is Emma Raducanu, who beat Danka Kovnic 2 straight, very straightforward sets yesterday, despite massive injury concerns. I mean, rumours were swirling that she wouldn't even take to the court. Practices have been cancelled. She'd pulled out of the tiebreak tens Eisenhower Cup mixed doubles event on the eve of the main tournament. She was, when she was practicing, she was practicing with both wrists taped up. I mean, it was a bit of a circus in terms of rumours surrounding Emma Raducanu before this match. And then she goes in and pulls off the most serene, straightforward victory. I mean, it was, of all the things we were expecting from that match, that just was not it. I mean, it was very uplifting to see, but surprising.
Mm. And then reports today that she was looking a lot better in practice. Russell Fuller reporting that she was really ripping her ground strokes in a way that maybe she wasn't even in the match and certainly wasn't before the tournament. Yeah, I mean, maybe that is the Raducanu story a little bit, that when you least expect it, she can pull something out of the bag. She's a fantastic competitor. And, you know, we saw it against Anka Kovanec at the Australian Open just over a year ago, where she had blisters and figured out a way to compete and find a game. And when she can take to the court and get her teeth into a match, then, you know, she's tough. But, yeah, I mean, I didn't even think she would take to the court. And now she's, what, won a match and has got Magda Linette tomorrow, who obviously reached the Australian Open semi-final, but hasn't been quite so good since. That feels like a pretty even match to me, close to difficult to call. And yeah, we could be looking at one of those pretty rare tournaments where Raducanu might even be able to get back-to-back wins, which would be big for her, I think. But the main thing is just she needs to be fit. You know, we said it about some players at the start of the podcast. So much of tennis is being able to play. I mean, it sounds really simple, but it's true. I mean, you've got to be able to just get yourself on the court consistently, and she hasn't been able to do that for so long. And I hope that now she can.
Yeah, because I mean, she's still such a great watch. We've seen her so fleetingly since she won the US Open, and occasionally you'll get a chance to watch her in full flight, and she still is a glorious talent as a player. And I hope that we just get to see the proper Emma Raducanu, the woman that we know is there as a tennis player. And because injuries, they just floor you, don't they? It's so demoralizing as an onlooker, even. Our goodness knows how they handle it mentally. The disappointments when you want it so much and you just keep getting derailed and you have to go back to start to sort of, you know, floor one and work your way back up again. But anyway, somehow she won yesterday. So we'll see what happens next time.
And after she won, an interview came out, a piece in the Times with Stuart Fraser, where she talked about a number of different things. She said she's had a social media detox since January, since after the Australian Open, deleted various apps from her phone. She said she's basically been living under, I think, her own little rock is the phrase that she used, which sounds like a blimmin' good idea to me for her. I think there was, she seems to have slightly irritated her Billie Jean King Cup coach, Anki Othavong, if Twitter exchanges are anything to go by saying she used, as an example of how kind of out of it she's been, she was asked about the upcoming Billie Jean King Cup qualifying match, and she said she didn't even know when or where it was, which perhaps is slightly unwise choice of sort of example, and but I see what she's getting at.
Perhaps you needed to hear her say it to understand the tone in which she said it, because written down it just sounded like she wasn't the slightest bit interested in even, she hadn't even looked it up or been told about it. And given Anne has been out here the last 2 weeks, I think making it pretty blooming clear when it is and how important Raducanu is to it all.
Yeah, exactly. She's actually been ill, Raducanu. She said she woke up on the morning of her match yesterday and really felt unwell, and she took a nap before the match instead of practicing. It's the way forward.
Yeah. It's always worked for you.
And then she went and joined Russell Fuller in the BBC radio commentary booth after the match and had a little go at commentating David.
Yep.
So you worried about your job?
It's not as easy as you thought, is it, Emma?
It was good, though. It was nice, yeah, you know, that he got that time with her.
She comes across really... I don't know her at all. I don't think I've even interviewed her, just been in one or two press conferences, but... She's fun, and yes, I mean, that was probably not very wise to have said what she said, but, you know, she's very likable, and I really just hope the best for her. I hope she can figure it out and have a clear run physically. We were talking about Karolina Mukova at the start of this podcast. I just hate it when you don't get to see what somebody's fully capable of because of injury.
Camilla Georgie Jessica Pegula news. Georgie is now 4 love, 30 love.
What is going on?
Yeah, not sure, in short. I mean, last time we saw Jessica Pegula was at the tiebreak tens event where she was not having the best time.
Similar facial expressions tonight, yeah. I have to say.
Yeah, lost early, didn't she? And then had to sit grumpily by the side of the court. Yeah. This is not going brilliantly, is it? Amanda Anisimova just kicking off against Linda Noskova, Matt?
We'll be watching
very shortly. What else have we got? Any other notable results? But Matt spoke to Barbora Krejcikova today.
I did, yes, for a future project. There's a tease.
I love it when Matt does the tease.
Didn't talk about her match. That's not what the future project
is
about.
She did win her match.
Matt very,
didn't demand
very
to speak
easily.
To her about an unnamed future project after a heavy first-round loss.
Win-only request.
Three questions, Matt. A, have you ever spoken to her before? B, what did you think of her as a person? And C, when's the project coming?
No, never spoken to her before. Certainly not one to one. I think I've been in some press conferences. She was lovely and very reflective and thoughtful and analytical. You know, I didn't really have to ask too many questions. She just came out with quite a lot to say.
She's a grown up, I think.
Yes,
that's what I always think when I see her. I think there's somebody who has not had it all happen for her early. She's and then suddenly it's like this moment of clarity. I can do it in singles as well.
And the future project is pending.
It'll be ready when it's
ready. It'll be ready when it's ready.
So just hold your horses and just wait.
What a tease. Jessica Pegula's won a game, folks. She broke in that game, so it's 4-1. Soon to be out of date tennis news for any fans of that segment.
Then I'll be thinking, I mean, Pegula's just won that quite straightforwardly, hasn't she? 4-3.
Another potential segment for future podcasts. What did I call it earlier? Loitering on the lawn with Law.
I'm a big fan of this news segment.
There is, famously at Indian Wells, there's the Players' Lawn, which is this huge grassy
area. Although not as huge as I thought.
No, but big. It's big.
And it used to be bigger, David was saying.
Used to be massive.
Well, now it's a decent-sized lawn.
It is big, and we've seen... Shelton performed incredible athletic feats on it all week.
The thing is, I never quite know whether you're saying Blake because of the laughs.
No, or... it's a brain worm now.
Right. Okay.
Sometimes on Instagram yesterday, I did for the laughs. That was a mistake.
We saw him throwing an American football around. I mean,
what an arm.
He launched an American football.
We stopped in our tracks,
like the quarterbacks do. and it almost left the... I know it's not as big as it used to be, this
still big
patch of grass, but it is football field length almost. And he just launched this thing towards his mate, and it almost went over the fence.
And then he switched positions with his mate, and he was running.
He caught one one-handed.
He caught it one-handed. I mean,
you could see a why he's got such an amazing serve because of the way he threw that ball. The throwing action is what they always talk about, isn't it, with a great serve? And secondly, the sheer athleticism of the guy catching that ball. And then we came across him a few hours later. Doing a skipping routine, didn't we? Like Rocky in the training segment.
I've still never seen him play tennis live, but I've now seen him do two other sports.
I mean, he was doing, I think you worked out, he was doing three rotations of
three
the skipping
revolutions
rope.
Of the skipping rope in between jumps. It was
extraordinary.
Again, it made us stop in our tracks.
Yeah.
All the while, he just seemed to be having... I mean, talk about living your best life.
The best
we all
time.
Decided we wanted to be Ben Shelton. I don't want to be Blake Shelton. But I wouldn't mind being Ben Shelton for a bit. I mean, I'm okay with being me at the moment, but Ben Shelton looks good too.
And he's got Taylor Fritz.
Yes.
Tomorrow. Very excited. Ooh, well,
yeah,
that match.
That's tomorrow. But yes, David's been doing some loitering, getting some, lining up some stories, some chats.
Yeah. I bumped into one or two people, so we'll see where that takes me.
This has turned into a sort of tease.
Tease heavy.
It wasn't what I was intending.
Tennis podcast tease.
Shall I bring you news of Wally?
Oh, I should, yeah.
Like Wally Masseur.
Indeed.
This Wally is an eight and a half year old bearded collie. Owned by David Good, who says he's quite idiosyncratic and obsessed with Frisbee. Billie Jean also loves a Frisbee.
I like a Frisbee.
She likes a floppy one.
Okay.
It's called a squeegee disc.
Yeah. Can't launch those quite as far, but still.
If you've got the right technique.
Oh, really?
You can.
Okay, well, yep. Billie Jean, I'm up for it. Let's go and have a good old time.
Wally is beautiful.
Yeah.
Would you like a look at Wally, David?
Lot of facial hair.
You can't see his eyes because there's so much hair going on. It's a sort of slightly Riley Opelka vibe.
A lot cuter.
Yeah, sorry,
without the
Wally.
Attitude.
Yeah. Idiosyncratic is a new adjective for our pets, isn't it? Love that. So thank you, Wally, and thank you, David, for bringing Wally into our lives. We have our mascots. David's got Maisie.
Right, Maisie.
I've got Xenia. Hello, Xenia. And Matt has Darwin. Lol. Billie Jean. Still not enjoying the cold weather. Sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our top folks and executive producers. We have Jamie and Drew. And I'd like to give a special shout out to Hannah, top folk Hannah today, because Hannah, via her friend Nancy, delivered us gourmet chocolates today.
What is that? Amazing.
Incredible.
Really incredible. In fact, they're a couple of feet from me right now. I'm going to go dive in for another one.
Me too.
Hannah, those chocolates arrived at a moment when...
Of need.
We needed a bit of a pickup was required at that point.
It was raining.
We'd had a bit of bad news.
So thank you, Hannah. And thank you to Jamie and Drew, of course, as well. If you want to send us chocolates, that's fine. We have shout-outs, Matt.
Yes, we have Ada, who is originally from Cleveland, but has lived in Europe since 1984, most of the time in Zurich.
Oh, I've been to Zurich with Tim Henman. Just the two of us.
And I remember Ada from entering one of our previous competitions.
Yes.
Was it from an opera house?
An amazing photo.
It was.
Yes.
Absolutely. Ada is a violinist.
Yes.
Right. Oh, there you go.
I think she might have a... Is Ada the one with the indoor hammock that you very briefly got very obsessed with, Catherine?
Even if she's not, it's worth bringing up because Catherine's face has lit
what
up.
What a memory.
I think that's right. Yes.
Thank you, Ada.
Yeah, thanks, Ada.
Ada didn't provide that information in this year's shout out, so maybe I shouldn't have said that. But anyway,
it's given Catherine a nice vision.
We've also got Penny Scott Francis.
Oh, hello, Penny.
Who
Penny.
Is in Carshalton, but via Putney.
Hey. Oh, hello.
Excellent.
Penny says that her earliest memory of Wimbledon was bunking off dancing college to go to lots of the big matches on the outside courts. She got a seat on court one and saw Billie Jean King and a very young Martina Navratilova.
Wow. While bunking off dancing college. What a life.
Mm.
Wow.
Well worth missing it, I'd say, to see BJK and Martina. Awesome.
Yeah, you catch up on the dancing.
Thanks very much for your support. I want to know
what Penny ended up doing with her life after attending dance. Is Penny a dancer?
We don't know that. she's a tennis podcast fan, we know that.
Let us know, Penny.
And finally, we've got Jimmy Piggott Bader.
Hello.
Who is in Tooting.
Oh, near Putney.
Mm. And Jimmy says, I'm a tennis podcast LTL, long-term listener. I had an unfortunate interaction with David a few years back.
You and me both, Jimmy.
Unfortunate.
When I passed him walking down the steps by Henman Hill on a late Wimbledon evening. Two problems, Jimmy says. I didn't have my glasses on, and I was listening to the pod right at that moment. So a combination of squinting hard to work out if it definitely was David, and being generally weirded out by seeing the person I was listening to walk towards me, made for a supremely awkward exchange where we just exchanged quizzical looks. I'm still lamenting the missed opportunity to properly say hi.
Jimmy sounds like our people.
Yeah.
Because when I have moments like that, I too think about them every day for the next few years.
Jimmy, let's sort this out. Let's meet up for a...
Fly yourself to Indian Wells, Jimmy, and get yourself to the Steve Fergles booth. Then you can have a new encounter with
exactly.
David.
Exactly. You could do that. Let's do it tomorrow. If that's too short notice...
12:30 and 1 local time.
Exactly. If that doesn't work for you, Jimmy, given that you're in England, Wimbledon, all right? I'm going to be there. Come and say
hello.
He'll
be there and he's easy to spot.
Don't get weirded out. I'm not that scary.
And
not at all. I mean, I do feel like Jimmy must have quite bad eyesight. Because I feel like without my glasses on, I could definitely still see David coming.
Yeah, it's not the specifics of David's features that make him...
That make him...
Identifiable.
Mm.
I mean, there's a lot of tall tennis players.
He's tall, is what we're saying.
You know, but I could have... I mean, there's already been one person who's mistaken me for a player this fortnight.
You could have been John Isner.
So, you know, maybe he just thought I was a tennis player, given what a strapping athlete I look like.
On that note, folks, I've just noticed, by the way, that Wally, in this photo of Wally, I think has a tennis ball under his paw.
He does.
Hadn't spotted that at first. Lovely stuff, Wally.
Sitting on a US Open type court.
There will be a picture of Wally in our newsletter.
Yeah.
Which will be coming to you soon. If you haven't subscribed to the newsletter, definitely, definitely do that. If you're not a friend of the pod and you would like to be, then details of how to become a friend are in the show notes. And of course, if you are a friend of the pod, then you can enter that fabulous, fabulous competition, with the prize being offered by On Location and Steve Fergles International Tennis Tours to win that package to come here to the BNP Paribas Open in Indian Wells next year. Any tennis podcast listener who comes to the booth and books any Steve Fergles International Tennis Tours package will get a 5% discount on that package. So you get to meet us, book yourself a lovely trip and get a bargain. What's not to like? And we will be back with you in a couple of days' time with our next podcast. They're coming at you thick and fast from Indian Wells, where Camilla Georgi is now 5-2 in the opening set on Jessica Pegula. One last bit of soon-to-be-out-of-date tennis news. We'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.